Thanks, Karen. Thank you very much.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 or ray@rte.ie. I was up in UCD this morning, and more about that anon, but it's in the middle of conferring season. So I felt, actually, when I walked out of the library, that I was on the set of a movie, because there was all these young, beautiful people in black gowns and the blue and yellow of UCD and their mortar boards, and proud parents from all over the country walking around about 6 inches taller than they normally are. And of course, the sun was shining and the lake was there. And it was just a lovely atmosphere. So congratulations to everybody all over the country who's getting conferred. It's a big day. It's a big moment. And now real life starts, you know, things like mortgages and all that sort of thing. unless, of course, you're going on to do a PhD and you're going to be one of those full time students. But for most people, the end of third level is the beginning of a new chapter, which is, as I say, real life. I'm glad, do you know when you think you're on your own and it's a bit troubling? Because I'm not the best sleeper in the world. I'm okay, but I'm not the best sleeper in the world. And I do wake up most nights. Like, if I sleep through, that's an exception. Anyway, I'm in the majority. I see that DFS, they're the people who make furniture, they've done a survey on people's sleeping habits. And only 1 in 10 of us are sleeping through the night. Only 1 in 10. So if you thought you were the odd one out, not getting a full night's sleep, you're not. Anybody who's getting a full night's sleep is the odd one out. On average, us Irish are getting 6 hours and 22 minutes of sleep a night. Reading a book, fluffing up the pillows and drinking a glass of water before getting into bed are the top ways people try to help nod off. And they have 7 sleep personalities. So which are you? Out like a light. Oh, I'm very jealous. 13% out like a light. Ceiling watcher. Goes to bed but struggles to relax and fall asleep within a reasonable amount of time. That's 20%. Clock watcher, wakes up several times a night to check the time. You shouldn't do that. That's not recommended. Late night scroller, scrolls social media light right up until you doze off. That's 31%. That's not advisable either, because the blue light from the screen affects your the patterns in your brain and keeps you awake. A dancer, the one who tosses and turns and wriggles around in the night without meaning. I do a bit of that. I'm a bit of a night dancer. Me firsts, the person who likes to be first in bed before your partner, 8%. And snacker is the person who likes to snack all the way up to bedtime. And if you get hungry in bed, you pop down to the kitchen for more. That's 5%. So you could be a combination of all of those. But I'm very jealous of the out like a light. I live with an out like a light person. Just like that. Nah. It's a talent. It's a skill. It's a gift. There's loads of surveys actually in the papers today. They usually come on a Thursday, but they're here on a Wednesday this week. Arwa Madawi in The Guardian today. My 9 small but satisfying secrets of happiness. We all want to be happier. I met a lady on holidays and she works with young people in a certain part of the country. And when she sits down with them at the beginning, she says, what do you want to get out of this process? So they're coming for a reason. And they might be from disadvantaged areas, they might have mental health issues or whatever. And sits them down and she asks them, what do you want to get? What's the end result? What's success for you? Do you know the way to say that? And the majority of them say, I want to be happier. I want to be happier. And as a result, this lady I was talking to, a lovely lady, is researching what happiness is and what it means to us. And I think it's sort of an overstated word. I think contentment is what we should strive for. Because if you strive for this Hollywood type happiness and you don't achieve it, then you're disappointed because you haven't achieved your target and you're not happy. So that's a double whammy. Whereas if you lower your expectations of life and you want to be some sort of, in some way, content, isn't that not a better thing? Anyway, Arwa Madawi in The Guardian. 9 small but satisfying secrets of happiness. And you might add into this 51551, the little things that make you happy. So Arwa says, putting your ice cream in a fancy goblet or wine glass, having a nice cup of tea, using a herbal nasal inhaler, right, reading a poem, forcing yourself to go on a little walk every day, a freshly made bed, a secret of happiness, rolling down a hill. You probably haven't done that since you were I haven't. I haven't. Still have a scar to show from rolling down a hill. Learning some basic home improvement skills. Yes, I've been talking about that for a long time. There's something about that. And it's the hands on the hips thing, isn't it? You do something, whether it's painting a door or whatever. And when it's finished and you're happy with it and you're pleased with yourself, you put your hands in your hips and stand back and go, I did that. And here's the thing we're not good at all. Accepting compliments. Just as a nation, we're not good. So learn how to take a compliment. Don't squirm with embarrassment. Don't overthink it. Just say, thank you. That's, you know, and we're bad at it. And if you do go, oh, no, it's nothing. Then it's awkward for everybody. So if somebody says, you know, well done, that was good. You did a good job there. Thanks. That's it. Everybody's happy. They've paid you a compliment. You've accepted it. Move on. So any little things that make you happier, share them with us today, 51551. I love these types of surveys because it's basically just made up out of somebody's head sitting at a computer. It's what your choice of coffee says about your personality. You see? Yeah. And you're have you already? Have you? Because we all have, you know, what do you want? I'll have a flat white, Americano, cappuccino, non-dairy, oat milk, soya, please. Thank you very much. Yeah. And could you put that in a mug, please, on a saucer? Thank you. Anyway, so do you want to hear what your choice of coffee says about your personality? Back in the day, it was just a cup of coffee. But of course, we're a lot more urbane and sophisticated now. With so much choice. So if you choose an iced coffee, which would be nice, a nice iced coffee for the weather we're having. Life and soul of the party. And if you're an iced coffee lover, you make a good lover. In fact, the best of lovers. So there, look at you. Double espresso, well-travelled, well-read. A single espresso, most likely to have a degree. If you chose a mocha, you're the sexiest of them all. A flat white, honest and trustworthy. A white Americano, straight talker, hard-working. Non-dairy coffee, moralistic, an introvert. If you're a cappuccino type person, you're satisfied with life. If you're a latte type person, you're a people pleaser. And if it's an Americano, comfortable in their own skin. So which one are you? I was a macchiato person. And then people were giving me various types of macchiatos. I don't know why I chose them. I don't know what it says. Anyway, which is, I think it's an espresso with a drop of hot milk. And then people got it wrong. So I'm just plain Americano now. So maybe that's a sign that I am now, at this stage in my life, comfortable in my own skin. I think that's probably true. So maybe there's more to it. I shouldn't scoff at these things. With the weather, there's a great picture in the Irish Times today of a family enjoying a field of sunflowers. Ina and Jack Vrappy with their daughters Olivia and Melina from Coot Hill in County Cavan are in the Mead Sunflower Farm, Fordstown. Which remains open to the public for about another week, as long as the flowering heads last. And you can get in there and get a picture taken among the sunflowers. That's a great picture. And I'm sure that family will get that picture by Alan Betson and frame it and have it in a position of prominence in their house. So there you go. There are other places around the country that you get your picture taken in sunflower fields, but that's one of them. Mead Sunflower Farm, Fordstown, remains open to the public for about another week. There you go, that's an idea. Well done to Paula Donovan and Fintan McCarthy. They're through to the AB semi-finals at the World Rowing Championships. They're on course to qualify Irish lightweight men's double for 2024 Olympics. So it's all good there. They came through the quarter-final today. It's one of the famous O'Donovan brothers and Fintan McCarthy. Now, we're talking Blue Zones again today. The documentary is still in the top five in Netflix. So obviously, people want to know how to live longer. Blue Zones are five places in the world that have the greatest concentration of centenarians. There's one in Japan, one in Sardinia in Italy, Ikaria in Greece, Nicoya, Costa Rica, and Loma Linda in California. They're all Blue Zones. And we're going to be talking about them today in the company of Roseanne Kenny, Professor Roseanne Kenny, who's written the book Age Proof. We spoke to her before. And we'd be asking her, do we have any blue zones in this country? And what can we do to replicate what they're doing in the blue zones around the world. So if you have any comments or questions on that, get them into us now. Stephen King, you know Stephen King, yes, famous horror writer. I love when people like him give interviews and divulge parts of their intimate personal lives. Just to see what's going on in their heads, because you go, The Shining. What sort of brain comes up with those sort of plot lines and those characters? And then you find out that he was a big fan of this song.
A little bit of Monica in my life, a little bit of Erica by my side, a little bit of Reed.
Yeah, he's given an interview to the Rolling Stone magazine, and he said that his wife of 52 years, Tabitha, threatened to leave him at one stage because of his obsession with Louis Vega's Mambo Number 5. And he even loved the remix of it. And this isn't the first. He has a history with dodgy enough songs. He was a big fan of Who Let the Dogs Out by Baha Men. And he's quoted in the thing. He says, my wife threatened to divorce me. I played that a lot, Mambo Number 5. I love those extended playthings, and I played both sides of it. And one of them was total instrumental, and I played that thing until my wife just said, one more time, Stephen, I'm going to effing leave you. She's out the door. I don't care if you've sold millions and you're worth zillions. I'm going to leave you. Stop playing that silly song. So I waited until she was running errands, then played it, not once but several times, because that's the thing with earworms. They attract even as they repulse. Put another way, you know you'll only spread that rash by scratching it, but you can't help it. He's obviously given a lot of thought, Stephen King, and Mambo Number 5. I wouldn't have put those two together now. What makes me happy? The smell of the basil plant just after you water it. Mmm, nice. Cutting the grass with a scythe at sunrise, says Chris in Wexico. The weather's so good down there, they're calling it Wexico. Keep those coming in. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Elvis Costello, he's playing the National Concert Hall tomorrow night. So an exciting week for Elvis Costello fans. Tony in Tullamore has been on. I can't stand coffee. So what does that make me? I'll look it up here. Tea drinker. Sensible solid. There you go. Sensible solid, Tony. That's good. I just made that up. Just like the person who made up the coffee things. But that sounds good to me. Sensible solid. Digging your own potatoes. Best happy feelings, says Bridget in Galway. Ah, that's nice. Now we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. Press the button. Yep. So three questions each, there'll be clues, you know the rules by now, and there's a prize. And this week, it's a two-night stay for two people in Slieve Donart Hotel. It's now part of the Marine and Lawn brand, and they're celebrating three new dining experiences by giving us a week of giveaways. So you have the Percy French restaurant, local favourite. Then there's the JJ Farrell's, perfect for afternoon tea, and the Wolf Bar, cosy spot for pre-dinner cocktails. The resort has a stunning new look. Slieve Donart is a truly landmark destination right at the foot of the Mourne Mountains. You can find out more marineandlawn.com. Marineandlawn.com. Here is your qualifying question on this Wednesday afternoon. This week marks 15 weeks until which popular festive holiday? Oh no. This week marks 15 weeks until which popular festive holidays? We're going to force you to say that word. Is it Christmas or Easter? So it's a 15 weeks to Christmas or Easter. 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925. Sinead Ní Uachtaráin.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Conas an tátú.
Gomagama gurumila mahagut.
And you're outdoors and enjoying the weather.
I'm enjoying the weather. It is roasting. I'm up here in Dublin 18 in Ballyogan, and it's the 6th of September. So children all around the country and teenagers are returning to school. So we decided that I'd return to school as well this week.
Nice.
Everybody.
I won't ask how long you're out of school.
Oh, God, how long am I out of school? Over 10 years anyway, we'll say that much.
Over 10 years, right, okay. Right, yeah. I'm out of primary school.
What about yourself?
I'm out of primary school nearly 50 years. That's mad, isn't it?
Wow, it's mad when you think about it, isn't it? But yeah. I bet you that you still have the memories from primary school.
And I do, and it's a recurring memory that comes up every year because, Sinead, my birthday is on the 1st of September.
Which, oh no.
Things have changed slightly, but traditionally, that was always the return to school date. So my task on the first day back was to avoid getting ducked or getting the bumps. Because you see, that was the tradition. If it was your birthday, you got ducked, which was shove your head under the tap, or you got bumped. So you got the number of bumps that was your birthday. Did you ever get bumped? No.
Is that when they give you sort of like a queen's chair?
No. What's a queen's chair? What's a queen's chair?
What's the bumps?
Well, four people would, you know, one person for a hand each, and then two people at your feet, and then they just throw you up in the air and count to say if you were 7 or 8 or 9 or 10, they'd count the number of times, and that's the bumps. No.
Okay. Not very pleasant for the first day back.
I mean,
you're going through enough returning to school after a lovely summer, not to mind getting all the rest.
So my job was to get through the first day without anybody remembering. So I remember some days you get to about, you get through lunchtime and then the bell would ring for the end of school and you'd be just walking out of the school gate and you'd think, I've made it. And next thing, somebody say, Darcy, isn't it your birthday? And then it'd be...
On the positive note, when you were in primary school, did you get cards or cake? Because I was talking to somebody today about this. When your birthday falls during the summer, nobody really makes a big deal about it. Maybe your family, but your school friends aren't around. You really don't see them that often during the summer months. So did you feel in a way like you had kind of just crossed over the threshold?
No, there was no, back then there was no real celebrations around, because people had bigger families and bigger class sizes, so you couldn't really do what they do today and celebrate. I can't remember even getting homework off, but then you wouldn't have had homework first day back anyway, would you?
No. I think first week back they let you off with the homework and then after a while.
And what's your memory of returning to school come September?
Oh, brown paper, buying a roll of brown paper, and my mother covering all the books and having new red and black and blue pens that would probably be lost after a fortnight, new rulers, pencil cases, everything was shiny and sparkly and new, and you'd write your name on every book on the brown paper and the subject underneath, and you'd put two lines underneath with your new ruler and your new pens.
Yeah.
And that's what I remember, and the build up to it. And it was kind of a mixture of emotions, because you'd be happy to get new new paraphernalia for school, but at the same time you knew that it was a return to school and that it was that would equal the end of the summer holidays.
But the other thing was you were seeing your mates again. You know, particularly I'd say in bigger areas where you're not hanging out with your mates during the summer. Like I was hanging out with my mates during the summer, but like I see now my kids, they enjoy going back to school because they haven't seen people since, June or July, which is great.
And people have stories to tell. What did you do over the summer? Who did you meet?
And
where did you go?
Essays to write. We used to have that every year. We'd go back and you had to write an essay. What I did in my summer holidays.
Unnucht.
Unnucht.
We used to have that every day where the Mosh Ross would write Unnucht and the Clor Dove, and then we'd have to write, well, each person would give a sentence saying, my aunt came from America yesterday to visit, or some
that's
piece
exciting.
Of information. maybe that's an exaggeration, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Okay, so you're out there to meet two lollipop people.
Yes, two lollipop people, two traffic wardens, to see what's ahead of them for the months that are to come and what every day means to them. Mm. Who do they meet? We all know about the clothes, but I was just thinking about the clothes because I am sweating no end here at the moment. So they have to wear a big long coat every day, gloves, steel toed boots. And can you imagine what it's like in this weather? So I'm going to find out what exactly they get up to, how important road safety is and how important it is to train children at such a young age as well. So I'm here, I'm just outside Gaelscoil Cliath Rua, and I managed to sneak into the school earlier today to have a conversation with some of the pupils who have returned. We shall go hall in Gaelscoil, Gaelin Le Clos Gach Oat, really nice atmosphere and great to get to meet some of the people who have returned after, what, 3 months away?
So, jealous. What did you ask them and what did they say?
Well, I wanted to find out what the best thing is about returning to school. And the first person I met was Faye.
Probably seeing my friends again and my lunch, because I like good lunches.
What you have for your lunch?
Noodles.
Oh, yum.
Yeah.
That's little Faye.
Very cute. Noodles. I used to have a sandwich for lunch at 12:30 and I think maybe an apple at 11. Can you remember what you used to eat?
No, we used to go home for our lunch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you'd walk home for your lunch and then come back after. When I tell my children that, they go, what?
Yeah, how close were you to the school?
Well, I sort of worked out it must have been 3/4 of a mile or a mile.
It's no wonder you're into the running.
I'm telling you, there you go. So there, before you even ran around the schoolyard, you were doing what? 4 3/4. What's that? 4 3s is 12. So you're doing 3 miles just walking in and out of school. Anyway, go on. Who's next?
Well, talking of maths, I spoke to Ollie and he was excited about the subjects that he'd be learning about.
Maths and English. I like doing English grammar.
Not a lot of people say that they like doing maths, but you do.
Yeah, I do.
What's your favourite type of sum?
Times and division, but like hard times, say times in tens and stuff.
And what about English?
It's cool. I like correcting people.
Do you read much?
Yes. I've started reading Lord of the Flies, Animal Farm, and then I started reading 1984, but I quit about a quarter way through. I just didn't get into it.
Come on, Ollie.
Good man, Ollie. Yeah, I remember the library in school as well, in primary school, and I used to love just hanging out in there. I was listening to you earlier. I like an Americano. Did you say that's a drink that introverts like to...
No, comfortable in their own skin.
All right, okay. What was that too?
That's you. Kai. Kai is next. Little Kai.
Probably playing out in the yard. We usually play tag.
Are you usually the person who's doing the chasing, or do you get chased?
I usually hide in a corner.
That's a good strategy.
Yeah, no one ever finds me.
Oh, I love Kai.
Great story, isn't it?
Yes, and if I was casting for a voice for an animation, Kai is that. Yeah. That's amazing. K-A-I, is that Kai?
I believe so, yeah. Contact Gaelscoil Thlí of Rua to get in touch with Kai for your next production. Agus Gandalf Muntori, lots of teachers around, and Ella was looking forward to meeting some of the new ones.
Seeing the Muntori and meeting the new Muntori in the school.
Who's your Muntori?
Muntori Gary.
Or Tadas?
Yeah, Tashi Onawa. Orinta, we go outside and play maybe a bit of football sometimes at the end of the day for like 15 minutes. So sometimes we do that, like on Fridays or...
What's your favourite subject?
Probably maybe Irish.
Anava, Kanahe of, why?
Because it's a different language other than English, so it's, you know, better.
Mm-hmm. You finally met Fintan.
Seeing all my friends again and getting to learn all the subjects that I like. Science and history and math and art and sport. I like coding and chemistry and astronomy. I like researching on different countries and then writing them down. Slán.
Is he a teacher or a pupil?
He sounds like a teacher, doesn't he? He was very mature for his age, Fintan.
Yeah.
And many thanks to all the people who spoke to me. They were wonderful today in the Gaelscoil.
Now, Tony says, your woman, that's you, Sinead, is pure posh with her brown paper. We had leftover wallpaper. Yeah, that's what we used to cover our
that's
books.
That's funky.
Yeah. And Anne says, it was one bumps for each birthday and one to grow on. So if it was your 7th birthday, you got 8 bumps. I'm sure you're not allowed for health and safety reasons. You're not allowed. You'd have to do a risk assessment form before you give anybody the bumps now. You can't be doing that anymore.
No way, Jose.
No. So I'm looking forward to meeting our two lollipop people.
Mm-hmm. Brian and Mari.
Yeah, great.
I'll be talking to them a little bit later on. So looking forward to that. But hopefully we won't melt in the heat.
Great.
In the meantime.
Talk to you then, Sinead. Good luck. Slán.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
So, we've been talking about the documentary series on Netflix, Blue Zones. It's still in the top five for Ireland. There's a big appetite out there for finding out how to live well and longer, about our longevity. Last Friday, we spoke to Dan Buettner, the explorer and writer behind the series. And today I'm joined in studio by Professor Roseanne Kenny. Roseanne is the author of Age Proof, the founding principal investigator of Ireland's study on aging, Tilda. And she's also, are you the boss person in MISA? M-I-S-A?
Yes, I am.
You're the boss person, right. And MISA, just introduce us to MISA.
Okay, MISA stands for Mercer's Institute for Successful Aging.
Right.
And it's a purpose-built clinical research institute within the grounds of St. James's Hospital, actually in the heart of St. James's Hospital. And it's for successful aging. So we very much focus, there are a lot of inpatient beds, 120 inpatient beds. There's a very big outpatient service, but the outpatient service tries as far as possible for older patients to have one site, one stop. So get as much done as possible on the one day rather than coming up with multiple appointments, which right. older people find very, very difficult.
So it's so, a centre for successful ageing.
Yes.
Right.
We do a lot of research.
First of its kind in Ireland.
Oh, yes. On these islands.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Right.
It was sponsored by the Atlantic philanthropist Chuck Feeney,
yes.
who's still alive and with us, living in California. And he had a vision of giving resource to what he considered to be underprivileged cohorts. And he saw ageing as that in Ireland.
Right.
So it made a huge difference, the resource he gave to us.
And so what sort of research are you doing there?
Well, any of the observations that we make in Tilda, which have clinical pertinence, because they're observations, okay? So say we show an association, for example, between irregularities of the heart and falls at the population level. We take that, we examine it in the emergency department in James's, we examine it amongst the patient cohorts coming to outpatients, and then we develop clinical trials to see if you treat those heart conditions, can you stop falls? And actually, we've shown the answer is resoundingly yes. That's just one example.
Okay.
So
because falls are a big thing for older people.
They are.
Because for a lot of people, they can mark sort of the beginning of the end, if you like, because they knock confidence and they knock mobility. So people stop moving out and outside the home because they lack confidence and all that sort of thing.
That is so true.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have been, I think, overlooked in the greater scheme of things. They're one of the commonest reasons that older people attend the emergency department. And usually, if the fall is bad enough to attend the emergency department, there's been an associated injury. If you fracture a hip, 45%, nearly half of people who experience a hip fracture at any age never get back to their previous functional level. So that exactly aligns very closely with what you've just said. Mm. They have a huge impact. Now more and more, if people are properly investigated for the causes of falls, and it does require a bit of investigation, they can be prevented. Very few services in Ireland actually provide a comprehensive assessment. So that's what we're exploring now as part of the clinical research we're doing.
I remember reading a book by a lady called Pollock on ageing.
Yeah.
And what she said was, if the fall is treated as just a fall and an injury, the outcomes aren't good.
Mm-hmm.
But if you holistically look at it and the reasons around it, and then bring the person back into their environment and, for example, with an occupational therapist and make sure that the environment is more suitable, then the outcomes are way better.
Much better.
Yeah.
Much significantly better. You can reduce falls by 60%.
Okay.
Whereas if you just apply, say, physiotherapy without actually looking deeper, or even give somebody a menu of standard exercises, which are not person specific, but generic, you don't have, it probably doesn't make any impact at all, but at the most, it reduces 20%.
Have you seen the Netflix documentary?
I have.
Right. Okay.
I'm absolutely loving it. I know Dan Buettner. I've met him before, and obviously I've studied his work for years. Yeah.
And one of the questions that threw up on Friday when we were talking to him, it was like, you know, do we have a blue zone? We don't, obviously, but where is the biggest concentration of centenarians in this country?
Yes.
So we looked at the statistics and we found that it is Mayo, Donegal, I see Dunleary as well, and that might be because of a concentration of nursing homes, but there are places, but the numbers are around in the 20s, whereas the five areas that Dan's talking about, they have over 80. For every 100,000. 80 That's centenarians right. for every 100,000.
Yeah, which is remarkable.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is remarkable.
Yeah.
And I love what he's explored. I think he's absolutely right. Of course he is. And it's, you know, that's been validated in a number of studies now. The most remarkable thing about all of the blue zones is the sense of community and the sense of purpose that they all have. And up until those original discoveries in the 80s and 90s, that was considered a very soft science, and there can't be anything biological.
Nebulous, vague,
science. Yeah. But actually, we now know at a biological level that having good community, having good laughs, engagement is de-stressing, and a problem shared is a problem halved. And the inflammatory process that we really believe it underpins all of the aging process is much, much less.
Yeah.
And the process of aging through epigenetic clocks slower in people who are part of a community, a regular, vibrant community.
So if you're stressed and you're not getting the good stuff from laughing and dancing and all connection and all that sort of thing, your inflammation goes up, and that's where you get heart disease
that's
and all
right,
those things.
Absolutely. Right. The things that kill us.
So it has a physiological,
that's
biological
effect.
That's
the point. In cells, which is remarkable. But then also consolidates the reasons why we should be focusing on this at a societal and policy level.
Yes.
You know, as well as individuals,
So let's just go there for a second. We'll come back to the other stuff. Because Dan in America is employed by, he calls them whatever, their cities anyway, to get involved in policy decisions to improve the situation for the aging population. So likewise here, we need to look at it. And one of the things I think everybody, and it's not scientifically based, it's anecdotal. People go to Spain, they go out for a walk in the evening, and they see all the locals, the older locals out sitting on park benches, having the chats, playing bowls or whatever. We don't seem to have that network in this country. And part of it's because of our climate. But what can we do at a policy level to facilitate that, do you
think? So first of all, make what we need for independent living accessible for everybody. Okay.
Right.
I mean, you shouldn't have
living,
to drive.
Independent living, now you've said that.
You
that's
shouldn't
important.
Have to drive to a supermarket to get what you want. You should be able to walk within 5 minutes to access what you need to live.
Right.
That's the first thing. Secondly, if you think of how our infrastructure has changed in Ireland, it's changed hugely. So some houses that used to be, you know, separated by a small, you know, narrow enough road now have almost, you know, four lanes of traffic between them, just making accessibility very difficult and being a neighbourhood very difficult. So first, infrastructure is definitely one thing. And then I think we have to think outside the box. And I bet there are amazing things happening in Ireland amongst communities that we don't know about. I'd love to know what it is about Mayo. Of course, a lot of it is by the sea. It's very rural.
Why are there more centenarians there?
Why are there more centenarians
Four
there?
Times more centenarians, say, than in Fingal.
Yes, I know.
Or Offaly.
Yes.
You know, so there is something going on.
Something going on. Yeah. And maybe, I don't know if your listeners would engage with you, because there is no way of capturing that information in Ireland. We can do it through the population data in a kind of superficial way. It needs to be much more granular because we don't capture, you know, niche projects which are proving to be good.
And the other thing is, I was talking to the lady in the CSO the other day, and they don't go down to a local level for privacy reasons, for GDPR reasons.
Yes.
But for example, we had the lady who set up Macaulay House in Naas.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard about
brilliant.
That?
Brilliant. I've been there. It's amazing.
Yes. So just you were there then. So tell people about that.
Well, it's a shared living experience.
Right.
So that, you know, I mean, we can't assume because you reach a certain age, you will need this amount of support. We're different. Just because we're a certain age doesn't mean we're not heterogeneous. We're all very different. And that's what they've tried to do. That's the first thing. So they adapt it to the individual.
Mm.
It's like precision medicine that we're starting to use now for drugs. They're individual
bespoke,
based.
Yeah.
But also they very much use the environment. And we know now that nature, exposure to nature is again really good for inflammation, the inflammatory system. It makes us feel better, and it's very distressing. There have been great experiments show that if you walk on a treadmill in a room just looking at a wall, it's hugely different to all of the stress markers we can measure: heart rate, blood pressure, hormone levels of cortisol, steroids, etc., than walking in nature at the same pace.
Yeah.
So there are independent attributes of exposure to nature, which they've done as part of their environment.
And there's an independence about it, so it's independent living. I just went back to your book, Age Proof, which is a great read. And one of the things, I don't think we covered it back then, was that Denmark, similar population to us, but they have 1/10 of the number of people in nursing homes. And they introduced a policy to get rid of nursing homes.
Yes, they did. And a number of other Scandinavian countries are now replicating this. Because if you ask people, we've done this research ourselves in Ireland, if you ask people, where do you want to die? Where do you want to live for your last number of years? Tiny minority say, I want to go into a nursing home. I mean, you know, on the fingers of one hand.
Yeah.
The vast majority want to age in place. And that's the policy decision they took. Mm. And then they said, OK, for individuals, again, individualising it, to age in place, what resources do we need to put in for that individual? Then they have now done economic studies, not just the Danes, but IFS in London have done similar studies, showing the cost of that model is no more expensive than the nursing homes run, private nursing homes, particularly in the UK and Ireland, which are for profit.
Yeah. And of course, in the UK, they have retirement villages.
Yes.
We don't have, Macaulay House would be an example of
it. It's a great example, but that's choice. Now we're coming to choice. So some people would like to age in place, but not necessarily in their own three-storey house.
Mm.
They'd like to age in place in their own independent space, but with a community. And the other interesting thing is most people prefer not to age in a community of peers all of their own age.
Right.
Mixed ages, mixed generations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very popular model.
None of which we have available to us here in this country.
None, no.
Yeah.
So they're all models that we talked about, Australia and
how
Denmark.
How do you account for the proliferation of nursing homes in this country?
So I don't know if this is factually correct in terms of attributing cause. I'm saying that as a science. But I do know that there were significant tax incentives offered for the building of nursing homes, that as a consequence, we have very large buildings with, in some cases, I was just engaged with one this morning with 200 beds and two nurses on at night for those patients.
Yeah.
Lots of healthcare workers. So, I mean, I think that must have been an incentive for
and
that
when
model.
When you go into a nursing home, my understanding is that there's no independent living, there's no flexibility. You eat when you're told to eat. And you go to bed when you're told to go to bed.
Eat when you're told to eat. You get your drugs when you... Because there's no other way of running it economically. So you get your drugs at the same time as everybody else. Do you know that the colleagues in Cork who do a lot of work on the microbiome, which is the healthy bacteria in the gut, they have shown that within 3 weeks of admission to a nursing home, our microbiome significantly reduces in variety. Now, having varied different bacteria in the microbiome makes it healthy. And if you reduce that, it makes you much more likely to have ill health, including mental health problems like depression and to feel lonely, to have heart disease, etc.
So people with dementia, for example, what is the choice for them?
They've managed this in Denmark and they don't have any different rates of dementia than we have here.
Right, okay.
And you'd be surprised how people with dementia can actually operate in their own space if it's familiar.
Yeah, like Brendan Courtney, his documentary with his dad where he wanted the Fair Deal scheme to be applicable to care in the home as well, that still hasn't happened.
No.
And it's very expensive to provide care for older
But my point to you is if we do it properly, it's no more expensive than the nursing homes are costing and it's a far better model.
Okay.
And I think that's not been fested up to in Ireland.
Okay.
We need to look at that.
There was a name for it, I can't remember the name for it in Japan, but it's a purpose, a sense of purpose.
Ikegia. It's
is
in
it?
Okinawa.
Right.
Ikegai, as I recall. Yes.
And Dan attributed, and scientists attributed that to one of the things that help longevity. And you know, And again, that's at a policy level because, you know, you've a brilliant idea. I like this. I like that we have Goshka for young people, the President's Awards.
Oh, yeah.
That maybe we should have something similar.
Yeah, so there's a group of us trying to pull something together in this context. Maybe call it Goshka Moore, because Moore also means older. And it's basically recognising achievement of people after they retire or after a certain age. So many people will say after retirement that they feel they are invisible. That's shocking. That equates to, I feel I have no purpose. And having no purpose is you're not in control anymore. Particularly this influences men, by the way, biologically, because we feel from an evolutionary perspective, men have to be, you know, dominant in terms of reproduction and continuation of the species, etc. So having a purpose is awfully important, and having it recognised matters. I think it would be a fabulous thing in Ireland if we had, you know, a President's Award, Goshka Moore, to recognise in the country initiatives, achievements, which is what Goshka means in Old Irish, achievements for people who are older, just as we do for youth of Ireland.
Yeah, great idea. Great. Because in all, and you will have read it, in all the research, volunteerism really helps.
Volunteerism really helps. And some people have great ideas.
Yeah.
And actually, if we could capitalise on those ideas, I think that would help. Because I think solutions to this, and there we are going to have a problem. We've almost got 800,000 people over the age of 65. In 10 years, there'll be, you know, fairly near that number over 75, etc., etc.
Yes.
We're living longer and we're the fastest aging country in Europe at the moment.
Okay.
So these are issues. Yeah. Also, it's worth noting to you that one of the recent studies last year showed we were one of the happiest people in Europe.
I saw,
so this
yeah.
is brilliant.
No, but here's the question, Roseanne, because you're at the coal face, I suppose, and you have the ears of important people. Mm-hmm. Do you see any hope in changes in policy about the things that we've discussed over the last 20 minutes?
I would very much like to see a minister for older people.
Right.
I think we can't ignore that this is a major issue, and it isn't sufficient to have it carved up between different appointments, and frankly, nobody really taking this.
And of course, we're back to the 5-year political cycle, because this is not going to be sorted in 5 years.
No.
This is a long-term
thing. This is a long-term strategy.
Yeah.
In Denmark, it took them 10 years to get where they're going. I know it was a colleague of mine that actually started that initiative, a professor of geriatric medicine in the University of Copenhagen. And it takes 10 years to get to where we're talking about ageing in place. That's only one thing. That's a very small proportion, actually, who require that level of help. We have 4% of our population, you know, of our older population in nursing homes. So it's small, but really important. But I mean, all of the other different issues with respect to getting older, with respect to retirement, all of those issues which need to be addressed. Our emergency departments are not fit for purpose for older patients, for example.
Yeah.
You know, the models of health and social care must change.
Is there an ombudsman for older people?
No, not that I'm aware of. No.
Would you take the role?
Oh, yes, if you're offering it, right?
It's not in my gift to you. But anyway,
of course, nor am I. No, but I would like to see more focus on it and something really purposeful with very clear deliverables. And there's a lot of information out there now, a lot of great ideas. The Tilda study has helped a lot for us to understand the tapestry of ageing in Ireland. So we've got a lot to work on.
Okay. Great to talk to you. Age Proof is Roseanne Kenny's book, The New Science of Living a Longer and Healthier Life, and that documentary is on Netflix, The Blue Zones. Thanks, Roseanne. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Sinead the Unicorn is out and about and meeting some lollipop people. Sinead.
Yes, Ray. I'm here in Ballyogan, Dublin 18. I'm looking across at Gaelscoil Liav Rua. And to the back of me, there's a skate park. There's a pitch beyond that. And I can see kids. It's a sure sign that school is back. People running around playing after school. But looking across at Gaelscoil Liav Rua, I can see the patch of land where the two lollipop people, Brian and Mary, who are by my side, have been working over the past few years, and it is busy. Cars are coming out from the car park behind me, coming out from the school, not to mind the other roads. The Lewis is nearby as well. It's very busy, and I'd say that they have had their work cut out for them over the past few years.
And Mary is with you there. How are you doing, Mary?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you.
You too.
Yeah, so it was lollipop ladies, and of course Brian is not a lady, so it's lollipop people now, or is there a different name?
They call them school wardens now.
Oh, excuse me. And do you get offended if somebody calls you a lollipop lady?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I do be called lollier.
Oh, lollier. I like that. Oh, there's lollier. There's lollier.
There's the lollier. I'm coming. Yeah, well, hurry up. Come on.
Yeah. So they're the people who are sort of 20 or 25 yards away and they want you to stay in the middle of the road for them. Is that's
the one? That's right, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And have you got a rule in your head for those people?
Oh, God, no.
No.
Just make sure to get across safe.
Yeah. How long have you been doing it?
About 8 years.
Right. And what's your day like? When do you start?
I start at 8:20.
Mm-hmm.
And finish about 8:50.
Okay. And then you're back on?
Back on at 2:10. And we finish about 2:25.
Right. And you have the full garb, Sinead was saying it, all the heavy coat and the high-vis, everything. High-vis, everything.
The cap, everything. Yes. Everything's high-vis, yeah.
Yeah.
Steel toe shoes.
And do you feel responsibility to be in good form? Because, you know...
Oh, you'd have to be, because when the children and their parents are coming, you're the first person they actually meet in the morning on the way to the school. So you'd always have to be in a good humour.
Yeah,
so you leave your problems at home and enjoy your work with the children.
Yeah, fake it till you make it.
Exactly.
Right. And can you spot, Mary, can you spot the personalities, you know? Would you know, he's a cheeky little fecker there.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
You can spot them a mile away. And because they're so chatty, you're able to pick them up. And there's not one of them that wouldn't be a bad child. Some of them would be a bit wild, we'll say.
Yeah.
And you'd have to watch them ones a little bit closer.
Yeah.
Because you have a tendency to run to the crossing. So you need to get them before...
But
they
no badness.
Run across the road. No badness at all. No,
you, you've sort of modern day challenges now. You have the electric scooters and the electric bikes. Mm-hmm. How do you handle those?
Just tell them to slow down.
Right.
Yeah. I'm the school warden.
Right. And you have complete control. So even a Garda car has to stop when you step out.
Oh, I love stopping the Garda car, me. Yeah. It's the only bit of power I have.
You're sort of pulling rank over them.
I do, yeah.
So was there one instance with one particular child who was running out, and what happened?
Oh, there was just one particular morning, the child got out of the car and the mother was saying, wait. Sure, the child didn't want to wait, he wanted to run, but he just ran that little bit faster. I had to grab him by the hood and pull him back in off the road, because the cars actually don't stop for you.
No, unless you're there in the middle. So you saved his
life.
Exactly. You saved his life.
Yeah. So I just pulled him straight back in, said to mother, I'm very sorry. And no, Jeannie. Then the poor child got killed.
Yeah, of course.
For running.
Given
so I said, listen, it's not his fault.
Yeah. So Brian is there beside you. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Ray.
How are you? You're a lollipop lad.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. How long have you been doing it?
On and off, 4 years.
Right. And you're retired. Can I tell them your age?
You can, of course. Yeah.
73.
That's right. Yeah, just gone 73.
Yeah. Is this an important part of your life?
Yeah. Well, it gets me out of the house. It's a good thing to do. You know, it's worthwhile doing. I worked in community centres and what have you. But and then this came up. So I used to do cover work for people, you know, funerals, etc. But then I was just asked to do it permanently. So, yeah, why not?
Of course, this is paid work, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Now, you wouldn't be to South of France.
No, on the back of it, no. No, but you do get paid and you're retired as well. What did you work at when you were working?
I worked for an IT company, Ericsson, IT and telephones. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You've seen big changes in that over the years.
Oh, yeah. When I started, you know, everything was hardwired and relays, and then it went to the electronic stuff, and now it's, of course, the cellular stuff, you know.
Yeah. Have you got grandchildren of your own, Brian?
I have. I better get this right. 11.
11, right, okay. Yeah. So you know how to deal with them then? The high fives and all that.
Well, up to a point, yeah.
And it keeps you young.
It does, yeah. As I say, it's a purpose, and it gets you out of the house.
Yeah, get you out of bed in the morning. Yeah,
indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, to you both, it takes a certain personality type to be a lollipop person. And you both obviously have it. And it's great that you're getting out there and helping the children. Lollier, Mari, thanks very much, Lollier. Lollipop Lad,
thank
Brian,
you
thank you very much. And Sinead Neulican
for Amagut.
Slán. Okay, quick commercial break.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good Marion, thank you very much. 51551ray@rt.ie. Just on getting old and older people, allowing our elders to live at home is a wonderful idea. But what happens when they get very frail and can't be left on their own for fear of falls, so they need 24-hour care? Is that really economically viable? Privately, it costs nearly €2,000 a week for this. I've been through it with both my parents and it broke my heart, and they had to both eventually go into nursing homes. They were in their 90s. Says that person. And Caroline says, nursing home care is now changing to individualised care, and it is insulting to care staff for you and your guests to say you have to go to bed when told, etc. Diets are tailored to individual preferences. They're asked every day what they prefer to eat. Their preference of rising and bedtime are accommodated within reason, and their access to activities they prefer is constantly being improved, says Caroline. So there. Not related, the Rolling Stones have a new single out, Hackney Diamonds. We mentioned that they'd put an ad in one of London's local papers a few weeks ago, and it brought you to a website, and it sort of teased the fact that there would be a new single. I just have it there. I'll just play a bit of it for you. That sounds like a Rolling Stone song. We might play it in its entirety tomorrow. Hackney Diamonds is the name of it. And I got a preview copy of Hot Press. It's a commemorative edition commemorating the late Sinead O'Connor, 1966 to 2023. And there are contributions from an impressive list of people: Bob Geldof, The Edge, Hosier, BP Fallon, Gary Lightbody, Joseph O'Connor, and loads more. And President Michael D. Higgins is there as well. And there's an amazing picture of Sinead on the cover. Thank you for hearing me is the caption. And then there's a picture of her at the back as well. And that's Hot Press, which will be in your shops this week. Now, we have two quizzers standing by. We're going to play our Who Done It quiz. Two quizzers and one prize. And this week, it's a two-night stay for two people in the Sleeve Dunnart Hotel. It's now part of the Marine and Lawn brand. It's celebrating its three new dining experiences. The Percy French, JJ Farrell's and the Wolf Bar. And the Sleeve Dunnart Hotel is a resort which has a stunning new look. It's truly a landmark destination right at the foot of the Mourne Mountains. And you can find out more, marineandlawn.com. marineandlawn.com. John Hughes, hello.
Hello, Ray.
You're in Kilkenny.
I am indeed, Ray.
And you're on a tractor.
Well, I had to get out of the tractor. I was told not to drive the tractor while I was talking to you, so
that's
I'm
fair enough.
In the shade of the wheel here now.
Right.
Admiring the sunshine.
And what are you doing in your tractor today?
I'm disking a stubble field where the barley was cut off of the last week, and I'm mixing the clay with the stubble so that to get the weeds to grow. Part of the new farming regime.
Right, you're disking, is that what you call it?
Yeah, it's a machine with a whole load of discs on it that are about 12 inches tall.
Right.
There's about 45 of them on it. And you drag it along the ground and it turns the clay over. It only goes down about 1.5-2 inches.
Right.
That's all you need.
And so you're mixing the stubble of the barley with the clay, and that'll grow weeds for biodiversity, is it, John?
I suppose, yeah. To green up the field after.
Right. And will you have to go and take those weeds out next year then?
Well, it depends on the crop now that the farmer's going to grow after this. He may be there for the winter, or they may come along and disc it again and sow another crop on it later.
Yeah. So you've a radio. Have you got Bluetooth connection in your tractor?
Oh, yes.
Right. So you're
top of the range.
Spotify, the whole lot.
The first round I had in the tractor was 1978 in a John Deere tractor.
Right,
I've been listening to out to one ever since.
Ever since, right. So the first tractor with a radio was 1978. Wow.
Well, that's the one I had anyway, before 2FM was invented.
Yeah, that was 1979.
And
the late Larry Gogan played the first song from the Boomtown Rats. I remember running home from school to hear it.
And I was cutting silage that whole summer, and then I was baling straw during the harvest.
Were you?
What was I then? I was only 17.
And apart from the Bluetooth and the Spotify in the cab of the tractor, nothing has anything else changed for you?
The seat has got nicer. Yeah. The radio speakers have got bigger. Yeah. The GPS system steers the tractor into a line from the top to the bottom of the field once I set it up.
Right.
So I could be looking at the phone, which I don't, of course. Can't look at the phone and drive. Yes, that's not a good idea.
Yeah.
But you can.
But I mean, it's a straight line. It's a straight line.
Correct. Or you do a curved one as well, but whatever configuration you put into the computer. And the GPS will steer the tractor from A to B, all the way across the field, up and down, parallel lines, precisely.
So there's self-driving in it, or whatever they call it.
Well, it stops you get the pain in your shoulder from pulling and tugging at the steering wheel all the time.
Yeah, 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 yeah. When are you finished tonight now, or this evening?
Another hour and a half, I should be finished in this field here.
Right. And is there a coffee maker in the cab?
Actually, I brought a mug of. I have a mug and I brought a coffee in the mug this morning with me, so it's still a little bit warm.
What type of coffee are you?
Well, actually, it's usually a cappuccino I have, but all the sachets were gone, so I had to settle for a latte today.
Right. Well, your
sachets are great because they have the milk already in them.
Oh, I see.
It brings the feel in, you see, if you have the hot water with you.
Sorted. Cappuccino, satisfied with life, it says. And. If it's a, what did you say? It's a flat white, is it? Honestly,
a latte, I think.
A latte is a people pleaser. So I think you're satisfied with life. I think that's you're a cappuccino man. You're up against Jeanette O'Reilly, or is it Janet?
Jeanette. Yes. Hi, Ray.
How are you? Do you get that all the time, Jeanette?
I do all the time.
Yeah, and does it annoy you?
Not really.
No. So you're just doing the ironing.
Well, I was when I heard the number called out for the quiz. I was doing a little bit of ironing because it's a lovely day, Ray, so I got all the washing out and in and ironed.
Aha. Now, do you iron everything?
No, not really.
No.
Just some of the larger things.
Yeah. So you wouldn't, underwear wouldn't be ironed, for example?
No, definitely not.
No. Right, great. And do you enjoy it? Because some people do.
I find it relaxing enough it's warm today for it, all right, but I don't mind it.
We were talking about what makes you happy as well, the little things that make you happy. What makes you happy?
Oh gosh, sitting out in the back garden on a lovely day, why right. not? How could you not be happy with that?
And would you have a coffee in your hand or a cup of tea?
Probably a cup of tea.
Right. Sensible, solid. That's tea drinkers for you. Sensible and solid.
And
I believe your son's home from Switzerland for the week.
He is, yeah. He brought the good weather with him.
Yeah. What does he do over there?
He's a environmental health and safety officer. So he works with an Irish company over there.
Uh-huh. How long has he been there?
About 5.5 years now.
Do you go over to visit?
We were over just once last year. It was fabulous. We couldn't get over with the pandemic for a long time.
It's
lovely country.
Yeah, lovely country, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely,
A lot to offer.
Yeah.
Right. So Jeanette plays John. So three questions each. I give you the category first and then I ask if you want a clue. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue, it's more difficult. So a correct answer will get you 2 points. And whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if it's a draw, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Okay, John. Music is the first category. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue, please.
No clue. For two. You've been listening to the radio since 1978, so you'll probably get this. Who is this? Now you know I can't smile without you. Any ideas?
I was going to say the Swarm Breaks.
No. It's Barry Manilow. Barry Manilow. Yeah.
Should have known that.
Can't smile without you. Okay, the clue was he used to hang out in the Copacabana. That might have done it for you. Okay, early days. Music for you, Jeanette. What would you like to do? Do you want a clue or not?
No
clue. For two, who is this? She can do as she pleases. She's nobody's fool. She can't be convicted, she's earned her degree. And the most she will do is throw shadows at you, but she's always a woman to me. Who's that?
Billy Joel.
It is Billy Joel, yes. From 1977, 2 points. Well done. Under pressure, John. Second question's on famous Irish podcasters. Famous Irish podcasters. What do you want to do?
So we'll chance it again.
No clue. Okay, can you name this famous Irish podcaster?
I lost my passport in Australia. Well, thought I had, and then obviously found it then in a pocket. Thrilled at myself. Arrive home from Australia, go to the American embassy the next day. Next thing, the Uber comes up, flying back up the road. He's like, "Oh, your passport's in the back seat." So I was like, "Oh my God, again!"
God, don't know. Do I?
Gonna take a guess.
I couldn't think of anybody.
No. Joanne McNally.
No, I wouldn't know her.
No, do you not? No, comedian. She does a podcast with Vogue Williams. My therapist ghosted me.
I've never listened to a podcast.
There you go. You should. Well, you can get them in the. You can get them in the tractor.
Yeah.
You should.
I'll be too busy listening to the RT radio.
No, but there you go. Sorry, I shouldn't be. I shouldn't be saying that. That'll be me gone now. Advertising podcasts. Right, okay. Now you're under severe pressure now, John, because if Jeanette gets anything out of this next one, you can't catch her.
Yeah.
So it's famous Irish podcasters, Jeanette. Do you want a clue or not?
I'll go with a clue.
Yes, that would be the wise thing to do. So here's your clue. She co-presents Dancing with the Stars. Can you name this famous Irish podcaster for 1 point?
Okay, so Renaissance came out last summer and it was a fantastic time for me because I was on my own.
Yeah.
I was doing my laps at the Phoenix Park with Bertie. Just, I really needed that time in my life to be on my own, just do my own thing, make my own plans with my friends. And then this album comes out and I listen to it from start to finish.
Who's that?
Dancing with the Stars.
God. No. Dearing Garrahy. Dearing and friends. Yeah. Okay. Now you're still in it, John. Yeah. You're still, Jeanette, you're still in pole position there with two.
Okay.
But John, if you get this one right, it's TV stars turn singers. If you get this one right, and then Jeanette doesn't get anything out of the last one, we're into a tiebreak situation. Okay, so TV stars turn singers. I have to ask you, do you want to go for a clue or not?
No clue.
Yeah. Okay, 2 points. Who is this?
Driving into Ramsey Street was quite something. I was like, firstly, where's all that time gone? Secondly, everything looks exactly the same. Thirdly, Scott, Charlene, Jane, Harold. I mean, it all came flooding back. There was a lot of talking about memories.
Who's that?
No idea.
John!
Paul Williams. Pure guess. I have no idea.
You're a pure chancer. Kylie Minogue. That's who that was.
Well, Kylie Minogue. I couldn't hear it properly. All right.
Right, you have to get back into the tractor. Listen, we're going to send you out a Ray D'Arcy Keep Cup, which is perfect for the tractor. What type of tractor do you have?
I'm currently driving a class 200 horsepower tractor.
One of five, Jenny Mackers. John, great talking to you. Mind yourself.
Likewise, Ray.
Good luck with the discing.
Well done, Jeanette.
Right.
Well done.
Oh, thanks a million, thanks.
So, Jeanette, you're off to the Sleeve Dunnart Hotel, marineandlawn.com. Enjoy it. Lovely talking to you.
Fantastic.
Well done. See you now. Bye.
Thanks
bye.
A million,
bye,
Ray.
Bye. 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 Bye.
On RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, this morning, as I was telling you, I had the pleasure of visiting the library at UCD to meet with Catherine McSharry, who's the Director of Cultural Heritage there. And the reason for my visit was to take a look through the late Maeve Binchy's literary archive. And Catherine joins me in studio. Hello, Catherine, again. Thanks so much for inviting me up to your place of work this morning. I'm gobsmacked by what I saw this morning. So you have this treasure trove of literary, it's sort of memorabilia in a way, in some respects. But I suppose when you come to a first edition of James Joyce, you can't really call it memorabilia, can you? Yeah, we'll get to him in a moment. But Maeve Binchy, tell us the story about Maeve Binchy and why you're back in the news, I suppose, because of Maeve Binchy.
Well, Maeve Binchy is at the heart of a literary festival that happens every year at the beginning of October called Echoes. It's in Dalkey, where she was from. And every year they do a range of really interesting things. And this year they're doing a staged reading of a play called End of Term.
Right.
That was first staged in 1976. And they were planning to do this rehearsed reading as part of the festival. And they couldn't find the last page of the play, which is a problem when, when you get to the crucial moment. And they We're trying to track it down. They approached Professor Margaret Kelleher, who's in the School of English in UCD, and she said, you know where you need to go? You need to go to Special Collections in UCD Library, where they have Maeve Binchy's archive. Uh-huh. And lo and behold, when we looked in
the
archive,
last page.
There it was. Right. Exactly.
And Maeve herself would have donated the first part of the collection. When?
That's right. So she approached the library in the early 1990s, very informal, in no great ceremony. I suppose that's not hugely surprising. And she asked the then librarian, Norma Jessop, if she wanted her writer's archive. Norma said, yes, yes, we definitely do. And then one afternoon, Maeve rang up and said, I have that stuff for you now. I'm going to send it around in a taxi.
Right.
And
like
the taxi arrived with the boxes in it to the door of UCD Library with as little ceremony as that, which is amazing when you think about how extraordinary it is to have an archive like that.
Yeah. And it's a great window into her world and the way she worked.
Well, that's one of the great things about writers' archives is we see the books on the shelves. You go into the bookshop and you look at the book and it looks like this perfect thing and it's hard to imagine the work that went in behind the scenes. When you go into a writer's archive, you see them drafting and rewriting and scratching things out. But you also see, say, in the case of Maeve's archive, you see she's mapped out how many thousand words she needs to write. So she's got little boxes. So it's a thousand, a thousand, a thousand, a thousand. You see, for example, for her second novel, Echoes, which is set in a fictional town called Castle Bay, she's actually drawn Castle Bay. Mm. So we have in the archive the map that she drew to guide her imagination.
And where the characters live.
Exactly, exactly.
Which was, it makes sense when you think about it, because if character A is going down the road and passing character B's house, they might bump into each other.
Yes, exactly. So it's all this imaginative work that brings the work to life for the writer.
Yeah.
But also really practical, you know, how long would it take to get from A to B?
Exactly.
And will somebody miss somebody if they're walking down the road? And those dimensions.
And she did that for every
joyful
book. She drew a little map of the.
So she often did those maps. She did. We can see it for lots of the work. These tables of how she was working through things. She was really, really hardworking and conscientious. And she had been a journalist. So one of the things that she learned from that, I think, was like just get the work done. You don't wait for
and
the muse to strike.
She's UCD was her place. She went to UCD.
She did. So she started in UCD when it was still in Aylesford Terrace. So that's where it was when she went to UCD. And it was a place that she absolutely loved. Like she really found herself there. Yeah. She talked about it with such affection. And she said afterwards, there can't have been laughter every day, but that's how I remember it.
Lovely. And then there's the scrapbooks. Who compiled those?
So the scrapbooks are a very interesting insight, both into what she thought was significant, the articles and so on that you'd cut out of the newspapers, but also for who did them. We didn't know until recently. It was her nieces and nephews. Uh-huh. So it was a little family task to cut out those articles and paste them into the scrapbooks. And now they're one of the things that you could sit down with and emerge 3.5 hours later, having vanished into the stories.
When I went up there this morning and you'd laid everything out on a big table, and my eye was drawn to a letterhead from the White House and the name Barbara Bush.
That's right. So Maeve had fans all around the world. Her works were translated to 40 languages. She sold 40 million copies. And Barbara Bush said, I think on Oprah at one stage, that Maeve Binchy was her favourite author. And Maeve said her publishers nearly lost their lives and there were sudden reprintings. And as a consequence, Maeve and her husband were invited to the White House to meet Barbara Bush. And there's quite a lot of correspondence between them. So you get the formal things, you know, the invitations and the stiff white paper and all that. But there's also letters that speak to a kind of intimacy and a friendliness, and probably Barbara Bush was keen to impress her literary friend as well.
With her letter writing skills,
exactly,
yes.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And Maeve was really funny. She was a really funny writer. And you can see that Barbara Bush has something of that in her herself. Yeah. She writes in 1995, after they've left the White House, she says, we were there recently to see our portraits being hung. I hated mine because it was exactly like me.
Oh, that's a bit sad in a way, isn't it? Yeah.
It is, and you can see she's kind of that self-deprecation
yes,
humour.
Which Maeve would have had as well.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, so that's up there. And yourself and Evelyn were impressing upon me that this collection and your work and everything is paid for by the taxpayer and you want more taxpayers to avail of it. That's what you said.
That's right, exactly.
Because people think that this is for academics and people who are writing books and all that sort of thing, but it's there for everybody.
That's right. And I think it's a whole continuum. So the research collections in UCD that we have in special collections or in our archives or in the folklore collection, they're really heavily used by our researchers and our students. And that's exactly as it should be. But they are also collections of national and international importance. And there are so many people in the general public, independent scholars, people who are just interested in a particular topic, who want to be able to see those kinds of collections. And so anybody can make an appointment and come in and actually get physically those materials brought out to them in one of those dark grey folders, yeah. And see that material. And I think Evelyn said to you, which is right, there might have been a time, not in UCD Library, but elsewhere, where people were a bit more wary and a bit more inclined to be gatekeepers. And that's really shifted very much in libraries now. Yeah.
So I was standing over a first edition of James Joyce's Ulysses, one of 1,000.
Yes.
From 1922.
That's right.
And who owned that originally?
So that was a copy that belonged to Constantine Curran. So Constantine Curran was a friend of Joyce's from university. Joyce was also a UCD man. And he and Joyce were friends to the ends of their lives, which, when you were friends with James Joyce, was quite the achievement. He had a great capacity for falling out with people.
Okay, right. And it's a sort of nearly like a somebody going into sixth class covered it because it's very flimsy enough cover.
Yeah, those editions of Ulysses are surprising when people see them. There were 1,000 of that first edition of Ulysses. They're all extremely valuable. And what you were meant to do is you got that. The book itself is big. It's got this flimsy paper cover, the distinctive blue that a lot of people will know. What you were meant to do is rip off that cover and rebind it in your own library binding, because you were the kind of person who would have a library binding and would get your special leather cover put on the book. Of course, if you had done that, you would have diminished the value by a considerable amount.
Right. I was also and looked through a book that was printed in 1481, 31 years after the invention of the printing press. And that's there as well. It was thanks so much for inviting me up. It's there for everybody.
It's there for
special
everybody.
Special Collections, UCD Library.
Special Collections is special and it's for everyone.
Yeah. Catherine McSherry, Director of Cultural Heritage up there. Thanks so much for coming in. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.